This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KABC.com. I am Alan Gervy, and I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, as usual, in 2019, first show of 2019, I'm here to be the managing partner of your life. And usually I would have someone to help manage your life with me, who is usually Carrie Kasem. But Carrie isn't here today. She is in South Africa on safari. Sometimes we say we send people out on assignment. We sent her out on safari, and she hasn't made it back yet. Hopefully we'll see her next week. And I am so honored and so excited that we have a guest co-host today, Melissa Lefkowitz. Yay.
Yay.
Glad to have you back. Melissa, of course, is with Chester & Lefkowitz. She's a criminal defense attorney, and she is formerly of the investigation discovery show Reasonable Doubt. I love that show.
Thank you.
And you were wonderful on it as you went trying to solve these unsolved mysteries and crimes. And that was a great show. And you've been a media analyst. Everywhere I look, you're there making a comment about some legal issue.
I have a lot to say, Alan.
I know you do. I want to say Happy New Year to you. And I hope this is a great year for you. And it's great to have you on the show. Today, we are going to talk about something that is kind of up your alley. I don't think you've had as much experience as a criminal defense attorney as our guest, of course, has. But it is, in fact, the 10-year anniversary. Back in December was the 10-year anniversary of the plea deal for Bernie Madoff.
My, how time flies.
Time flies. Well, I don't know if it has for him or not, but maybe Ike Sorkin has some insight into it. And Ike Sorkin, Ira Lee Sorkin, that's the proper name, but we're going to get personal with Ike. He has been the attorney for a number of white-collar crime, criminal defense cases, SEC enforcement, other regulatory investigations and proceedings. He was formerly of the U.S. Army's office in New York many years ago, and he was deputy chief of the crime division at the Securities and Exchange Commission, chief legal officer of a member firm of the New York Stock Exchange. He's done it all, and of course, he has represented some of the most notorious fraudsters, I would say, Stratton Oakmont and Jordan Belfort, who is the Wolf of Wall Street. What a great movie. Everyone saw that. I also represented Manzer Al-Kafir, who was a Syrian convicted in November of 2018 of supplying arms to undercover agents posing as anti-American terrorists. And of course, the subject matter of our show today, Bernie Madoff. Ike Sorkin, welcome to Gervy's Law.
Good to be here. One or two corrections. There's no such thing as the United States Army. It's the United States Attorney's Office in New York, and the SEC is a civil agency that doesn't have a criminal division. But with those minor corrections,
thank you.
Delighted to be here.
2019 is off to such a great start. I don't know why I said Army, of course. You could have been in the Army, but we were talking about the attorneys. We are lawyers here, and sorry about that. 2019 is just going to get so much better as we move forward. And I want to ask you, because this is a quote that has been attributed to you, and I assume it's true, but we want to address the elephant in the room right off the bat. And this is what you said. We defend the people who are charged with doing bad things in order to protect the rights of those who do not do bad things. You said that, didn't you?
I did indeed. That's correct.
Explain that to us, because a lot of people just don't get it. I know, and we'll talk about this more later, but people have vilified you and, of course, Bernie Madoff as an evil person, not you necessarily, not understanding why attorneys represent people who really are entitled to a defense.
Well, look, we have a role to play under our system of justice, and our role to play is to force the government to prove its case in a criminal case beyond a reasonable doubt. That's the role we play. And we don't make judgments about the conduct. We may have a moral view. We may have a legal view. But our role is to force the government to prove its case. And that goes way back to the Constitution. Indeed, it goes way back to the time that we've had situations such as our second president, John Adams, represented a bunch of British soldiers who were charged with shooting colonists in 1770. And he wasn't a very popular guy then. But he did it because everybody is entitled to a vigorous defense under our Constitution. We don't make the judgment. Our role is to be there to protect the constitutional rights of the individuals we represent and force the government to prove its case.
But despite that, people just don't like us until they need us, do they, Ike?
Oh, that's for sure. They can vilify lawyers until it's time to call a lawyer because there's an FBI agent and 10 marshals standing at their door at 5 a.m. in the morning. That's happened to me. And a panic sets in and they call their lawyer. Up until that time, they don't want to know you.
But the cynic would say that if someone did something wrong, then maybe they deserve to be in that predicament.
Well, who decides whether they've done something wrong? That's the whole point of the system. The jury is supposed to decide after a person has been charged whether that person did something wrong. And your role as a defense lawyer is to go in front of the court and the jury and force the government to prove its case. You're not there to decide whether your client did or did not do it. That's not our role. Our role is to force the government to prove it.
Absolutely. As a criminal defense attorney, I occasionally get threatened, and I imagine whatever threats made against little old me, you could probably quadruple as a criminal defense attorney. Can you tell us about some of the threats that have been made against you since you took on these high-profile cases?
Well, I think that the interesting thing about the Madoff case was that I received a couple of death threats. I received numerous anti-Semitic rantings because Bernie Madoff was Jewish, I'm Jewish, and the view was that there were emails that I received representing Madoff. One sticks out that said that the person's deepest regret is that the entire Sorkin family did not die in the Nazi death camps. And also, how could you represent a crook? And then, of course, since we're on a public radio, I won't use the terms used that were submitted by a number of people, but I can tell you that they were quite vile and said essentially, you know, you should rot in hell with your client. Those are the two areas, the anti-Semitic stuff, the death threats. But the worst part about it, I expected the death threats and I expected the anti-Semitic stuff. The worst part about it is what you're talking about now. People don't understand the role we play. How can you represent a crook? Well, you don't represent a crook. You represent an individual who has certain constitutional rights. And Bernie Madoff had constitutional rights. And you need to protect his rights.
Absolutely.
That's the role we play.
And it's a bigger picture that people don't seem to understand. And I know that I saw on a program that you did, I think it was a CBS early show many years ago, that you actually said you were rather surprised to see all of this hatred toward you. But were you really surprised? Because people don't get it. All they see is the emotional issue, not the bigger philosophical jurisprudence picture.
Well, the interesting thing, you know, Manzer al-Kassar was an arms dealer, a worldwide arms dealer. And he was a Syrian living in Spain, very close to the Assad government, the father, not the Assad today. And yet, I'm involved in the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. I'm on the board of governors and on the executive committee, and I've been to Israel almost 45 times on behalf of the Hebrew University. And what was interesting is that no one from the intelligence agencies, ex-intelligence people, who knew me and who were friendly, and I'm friendly with them, ever questioned my representation of an arms dealer who, let's put it this way, was on both sides of the aisle. No one questioned it. And yet in the United States, in representing Madoff, the anti-Semitic stuff was just unbelievable. because it went from how can you represent a crook to how could you represent somebody who did this to us, meaning the Jewish community. And that's what surprised me. I've said to people, and I'll say it to you, can you imagine what it would have been like if Madoff had done this, not done this, but had participated in his Ponzi scheme involving Southern Baptists, African-Americans,
right?
Evangelicals. I mean, the uproar would have been horrendous, incomprehensible. But with respect to the Jewish community, who he was attracted to and who clearly were attracted to him, that's where the anger and the vile stuff came from.
And I understand that. Ironically, things haven't changed that much because just in the last few weeks, when LeBron James here in L.A. came out with a tweet about talking about Jewish money, he said he was just quoting rappers' lyrics and that's what he does. And then when he apologized, he said, oh, I thought it was a compliment. That really didn't ring true with many people. They just felt, okay, we'll give him a pass. Why is it that, as you said, if this would have been the opposite and Bernie Madoff would have been involved with a lot of other ethnicities or cultures, that it just would have been bloody murder?
Oh, it would have been worse. It would have been worse. But, you know, you hear stuff like that. And, of course, if you go back to the civil rights movement, in its infancy, Jews were very active in support of the civil rights movement and marched with Martin Luther King, gave money to the NAACP, represented representatives from the NAACP. So, you know, if you go back and look at the history, what LeBron James said, maybe he thought he was joking, but if you look at the history, he needs to be somewhat educated as to the role of Jewish lawyers and Jewish philanthropists and Jewish activists who played a very strong role in assisting African Americans as they fought for civil rights.
Right, and it also fosters really ill will toward Jewish people that maybe LeBron James just doesn't understand. We got to take a quick break. We got a lot to talk about. We're talking to Ike Sorkin, Bernie Madoff's attorney. You're listening to Gurry's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
The Store More, Save More event is going on now at the Home Depot, and it's the perfect time to get a handle on clutter. Even better, get an HDX 27-gallon storage tote, a special buy at just $8.98 each. They're tough, they're stackable, and each one can hold 75 pounds. That's some heavy-duty storage without the heavy-duty price. The Store More, Save More event is going on now at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Valid through February 4th, available in-store and online while supplies last.
I'm a real person, real voice, and a real face. Even though you can't see it because, you know, radio invisibility. You know what else is super duper real? Geico local offices. A Geico local agent could tailor fit a policy to you, which could save you hundreds on your car insurance. All because Geico local agents keep it real, with real savings and real service. Really.
And if you're looking for more ways to save, your local Geico agent could help with your homeowners, condo, and renter's insurance too. Stop by or give them a call today.
As a small business owner, you make every dollar count. So what could you do with $10? Go to Vistaprint.com today and you'll get 500 high-quality custom business cards for only $9.99. That's less than 2 cents per card. And at Vistaprint, your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. So it's never been easier to turn 500 strangers into connections. Just visit Vistaprint.com and use promo code 3838 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 3838.
Don't miss Macy's One Day Sale with over 25,000 deals of the day in-store and online, like women's wool blend and down coats 60% off and boots and cold weather shoes 50% off. You'll love designer pillows at just $6.99. Plus, take 20% plus an extra 15% off blenders, juicers, and food processors. And plan the vacay with 65% off luggage closeouts today only at Macy's. Savings off sale prices. Exclusions apply. Macy's Star Rewards now offers perks everyone can love, no matter how they pay. Sign up for free in-store or at Macy's.com/Star Rewards.
Welcome back to Gurvey's Law, lifting Murphy's Law to the highest level on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're back. We're grooving to the music here. It's been 10 years since Bernie Madoff pled the sentencing 150 years in prison for probably the biggest Ponzi scheme that the world has ever seen. And we're talking to Ike Sorkin, who is Bernie Madoff's attorney, or was, and I guess continues to be. You know, Ike, I want to ask you a question that I'm referencing other attorneys who have represented people who have not been popular, who have been on our show. And a lot of them have said that they've had some disturbing conversations with their clients, and some have not been disturbing. F. Lee Bailey was on the show and he talked about O.J. Simpson. Interestingly, John Henry Brown was on the show and he represented Ted Bundy, and he mentioned that Ted Bundy had said that John Henry Brown reminded him of himself, and I don't know how John Henry Brown took that, but he wasn't too thrilled. Dick DeGaren was on the show, and he's currently representing Robert Durst, who's the subject matter of the HBO miniseries The Jinx. And he said that Robert Durst has said a few things to him. Tom Mesro talked about representing Robert Blake and Michael Jackson, Suge Knight, and some of the things that have said. Now, we know we have an attorney-client privilege, although sometimes some of these attorneys have had a waiver signed in order to be able to talk about their clients. Have you had the same experience with Bernie Madoff?
The short answer is yes and no. First of all, Diana Henriquez of the New York Times wrote a book, and it pretty much covered everything. She interviewed him, and everything I've told you and everything I will continue to say to you is public. There are no secrets. Certain things I can't comment on, but the general thrust of what happened is still fair game and open for discussion. You should know that he took the position that the Ponzi scheme started in the early 90s. Diana Henriquez, in her book, says she thinks it started in somewhere between 86 and 90, and the government took the position that it started much earlier. The fact of the matter is that his boys, both of whom sadly are no longer with us. One of them committed suicide in 2010, and the other died of cancer about 4 years ago. They were the ones that, in effect, brought the fraud to the government. He confessed to them in the afternoon of December 10th, 2008. I was in Washington at the time. I didn't know about it, although he said he wanted to see me. He adjourned it, the meeting, until December 15th, and the boys were told by their father that it was all a fraud. The next morning, they went down to the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York, told the U.S. Attorney's Office what their father had said, and that morning, December 11th, FBI agents with an arrest warrant went up and arrested him. And by the time he called me, which was about 9:30 in the morning on December 11th, I was still in Washington, he'd already confessed to the FBI. And by the time I got back to New York later that day, they had seized all of the computers and all the records and so on. So it was done. But it was the boys, his boys, that reported him to the government.
Now, Diana Henriquez said that she didn't believe that anyone in the family really knew about his misdeeds. Is that really plausible?
Absolutely. It is absolutely correct. Certainly, Ruth, his wife, knew nothing about it. The boys knew nothing about it. The boys reported him. Bernie kept them away from the 17th floor. The proprietary trading of Madoff Securities was done on the 19th floor, and the boys were involved in supervising, for want of a better word, the proprietary trading. But he never allowed the boys to go down to the 17th floor where all of the stuff was going on. And the boys wanted to change the name of the firm to Madoff Securities from Bernard L. Madoff, and he refused to do that.
Hmm.
I think at the end of the day, he deliberately kept them away from what he was doing on the 17th floor of the building.
Well, that's the least he could do, Ike. The Madoff scandal exposed gaping weaknesses in financial regulations. What are your thoughts on the resulting reforms that are now being put to the test? And despite all the progress, could we still have a Madoff-scale scandal in our future?
Of course. I mean, greed doesn't go away. During the 90s, during the heydays of Stratton Oakmont and Jordan Belfort and so forth, there were boiler rooms. They were rampant. They're still around, the boiler rooms. And although Congress, in its wisdom, has increased the penalties for engaging in that type of conduct, it still happens. You still have insider trading.
So what advice would you give our listeners who are all listening here at home, at work, in their car, who are hoping to avoid being a victim of a Ponzi scheme, even at a small level, at any level? What red flags should they be looking for?
I'll tell you it in two words. Ask questions.
Very good.
And the second word is transparency. If someone tells you something, don't take it as gospel. Ask questions and don't succumb to greed. If someone tells you, the old saying, too good to be true, ask questions. The problem in the Ponzi scheme with Bernie Madoff is that he kept people away. If anyone came to him and says, how are you doing this well? Where are you getting these returns? He'd say, you're out. Don't ask me that.
Wow.
You ask me again, you're out. And those people didn't want to know. As long as they were getting their returns, beating the market, that was good enough for them. The problem with the boiler rooms, the Stratton Oakmonts and so forth, the microcaps, is that people succumb to instant riches. If the market goes down, panic. If it goes up, great. But they want returns in 2-3 weeks, 3 months at most. That's not the way it used to be. And the people who get sucked into these things don't ask questions.
So is it
greed takes over?
So is it greed, or is it the sense that these people are perhaps psychotic, think that they're Robin Hood? What is fueling these people? What are these people? Are they expressing remorse?
You mean the people who engage in this kind?
Yes.
Oh, sure. Look, when they get caught, they express remorse. You don't express remorse until you get caught.
But the thought process behind it, do they think they're saving others? Do they think they're Robin Hood?
No, they think they're getting rich.
No.
It's greed-based.
But it's greed on both sides. The guys who are committing the frauds are greedy, and they don't care if they're ripping off people. The people who are being ripped off are greedy because they don't ask questions. They see returns. They're making money. They don't want to know how it's being done till the thing collapses.
Ike, what about an independent third-party custody account? Aren't those people who have some transparency where there's an account which is independent? Isn't that going to guarantee that there's not going to be these shenanigans?
No, not necessarily. I mean, the SEC, who I'm very fond with, spent over 5 years with the SEC, blew it. They just miss it. And they missed it for five reasons. One, they never asked about custody. Where are the securities? Had they asked that question, they would have discovered there were no securities. These were all fictitious trades. The second thing is that they never asked the question, if you're trading billions of dollars worth of securities overseas, tell us the banks. Third thing they never asked was, who's your outside auditor? It's one guy with a couple of guys up in New City, New York, in a little storefront. That's a red flag. The fourth thing, which is if you're trading all of these securities, you're paying commissions for the execution. Let's see your books. Never ask that. And the last thing, which was the one question that would have put an end to it immediately, was what was happening at the DTCC, the Depository Trust Clearing Corporation, which clears all the trades. If they looked at a trade at Madoff Securities showing that yesterday the firm bought, let's say, 500,000 shares of IBM to be allocated to the so-called advisory accounts that Madoff advised, and then gone to DTCC to see the contraparty, who was the seller? Well, there was no contraparty, because there was no sale. These were phony trades, never did that.
Was there ever any type of reference made to a trade? For instance, I know I have an investment advisor, and when trades are made, I don't know about them, but I always get an email, and I know some of this was before email, a lot of it was, but wasn't there any type of statements going out? Because I read somewhere where it said Bernie Madoff never made a trade since 1991, didn't make one trade. But what about statements to his clients, and what about emails of trades being made?
The people got statements, but the statements were phonies. They manufactured the statements. If you got a statement in the mail that showed that, let's suppose, very simple, you invested $1,000 20 years ago before the thing blew up. And you were receiving 10% every year for 20 years. So now you believe that you have $3,000 in your account, $1,000 principal and $2,000 you made on the trades. If you wanted the money, the $2,000 you made, and leave the principal there, he would send you $2,000. But it was somebody else's money. That's the nature of the Ponzi scheme. He got money from somebody else to send you the $2,000. That's how it worked. The reason it all blew up is that in the financial crisis of the early 2008, people wanted their money. They were seeking redemptions. The market was down. There was a recession. If you all remember Bush and Clinton, it's the economy stupid. That's how Clinton got elected and so forth. And people wanted their money. And he started to scramble to get more money. The amount of the redemption requests was in excess of $7 billion. That's what it'd be.
Wow.
And they didn't have $7 billion.
You didn't have the money, and people weren't investing at that time in the heyday when people were putting money in.
That's correct. So he was scrambling around for months to try to raise money. The most he was able to raise was a measly $250 million. And it finally all ended. He saw it was going to blow up, and he confessed to his boys on December 10th.
It's amazing to me that more people weren't implicated because of this elaborate scheme. When you talk about the statements and you talk about, you know, SEC not monitoring the funds and there being no real accountability by JP Morgan Chase and the banks involved, I think you're right. There are a lot of people who are responsible, and maybe it's not just Bernie Madoff. He was just, dare I say, the scapegoat, or am I going to get death threats? And are people going to say that my family should have perished in the Holocaust?
No, it was not a scapegoat. I mean, he was able to keep it going because the markets were going up, and every time somebody wanted money, he would get more money from another party. He'd send it out. And people were happy.
But what about J.P. Morgan Chase?
Well, you know what? We're going to have to save that question for after the break. It's awful that I'm playing devil's advocate here. Ike is just, he's telling it like it is. We got more to talk about. It's a fascinating topic. We got to take a quick break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790, KABC News Update, I'm Steve Cumming. Three people are dead and four others injured after a shooting in a bowling alley in Torrance. Police were called to the Gable House bowling alley late last night and found several gunshot victims. Witnesses say someone started shooting after a fight broke out inside the building. Police say they are working to identify suspects in the shooting. Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren is setting the record straight about her DNA. In a Q&A in Sioux City, Iowa, Warren said she released a DNA test to back up her Native American ancestry in a move of transparency.
I am not a person of color. I am not a citizen of a tribe. Tribal citizenship is very different from ancestry.
She noted that she cannot stop the GOP or President Trump from hurling racist insults at her, but what she can do is fight for America's families. KABC SoCal weather, a 50% chance of showers this afternoon with highs around 60. More news coming up in 30 minutes. Continuing coverage at KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
I'm Nick Sobolewski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I shopped the many highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $27 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 800-860-6565. That's 800-860-6565. 800-860-6565. Or go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Holidays leave you strapped for cash? How does four shots at $1,000 sound?
Lord, that sounds good.
It's the $1,000 payoff on 790 KBC, and it's easy to win. Just listen for the national keyword weekdays at 6, 9, noon, and 3, then text it to 95819 for your shot at $1,000 four times a day.
Ka-ching!
The $1,000 payoff on 790 KBC, because politicians aren't the only ones that should be paid off. Rules and info at KBC.com, and please do not text and drive.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
You're supposed to play the money theme. Greed and money. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. We're talking to Ike Sorkin, Bernie Madoff's attorney. Ike has been ranked as the best lawyers in America, super lawyers, guide to the world's leading white-collar crime lawyers, who's who legal business crime defense, just about every designation that you can think of for a lawyer. He works with Minson Gold as a partner there and has been involved with his own firm as well until the merger. Received an honorary doctorate in philosophy and designated as a benefactor for Hebrew University of Jerusalem. And we can talk about that a little later. We've had Patty Glaser on recently. I don't know. Do you know Patty?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, I know her well.
Yeah. So Patty talked a lot about Hebrew University, and it's something that's near and dear to my heart because my sister-in-law has worked for them in Canada, for the Friends of the Hebrew University of Canada, and my niece went and studied there. So we can talk about that a little bit later.
Small world.
It is a small world, and you know, people like Patty Glaser and Ike Sorkin, when you have people like that working for you, it really shows what lawyers are all about, the time, the dedication to such a worthy cause, and it's not all about just defending or litigating. There's so much more to lawyers.
Well, I appreciate that. I no longer represent Bernie. But I still am in communication with him. I no longer represent him.
You know, let's talk about that, because you said you still have communication. You offered that, and as a good lawyer, I'm going to jump on it. Diana Enriquez said that he was very remorseful when he first went to prison and after the plea deal, and he apologized and made statements after the conviction. Then she said that something changed, and as time has passed, he has not been as much, he has not shown the remorse, and she said it's probably his narcissism kicking in. He's not as contrite as he was after the conviction. Is that something that you can comment on, or is she just way out in left field?
No, I don't think she's out in left field. I think in some respects, he's had a lot of years to reflect upon it. And I think what irritates him more than anything else is the fact that there were others involved in this Ponzi scheme, and I say that generically,
right,
who were not prosecuted. There were instances where people who were investors with him, who knew what was going on and used him, of course he consented, to facilitate trades for tax purposes, to avoid paying taxes. There were people who, and I'll give you an example. If someone came to him and said, listen, I need a tax loss, let's take Dell. What's Dell trading at today? Dell's trading at, let's say, $50 a share. I'm making it up.
Yeah.
And what was Dell trading at 3 months ago? It was $42 a share. Okay, put me down as going short $42 a share. 3 months ago and covering at 50. I got an $8 tax loss there.
Wow. So,
you know,
so he feels
my short.
So he feels slighted, even in the face of all of his willful depravity. He's sitting there, he's stewing over it. It's been years, and now he's feeling slighted by this, that, and the other. Where is the remorse that we're all still looking for? Where is that? It's just gone?
It's there, but I think he's become incredibly, this is my own speculation,
yeah,
cynical about the whole process because he thinks the government singled him out. And there were others, in his view, who knew what he was doing, and he was facilitating their shenanigans, if you will. And there were banks involved, which walked away from this. And I think there's a certain degree of cynicism on his part that I wasn't the only one.
The banks did walk away. You know, I did want to talk about the Chase Bank, J.P. Morgan Chase, and how they, to me, walked away with just a slap on the wrist. We're talking about the sum of money that they make in what, like 10 days, Ike, is what they were responsible of giving back in restitution?
I'll be very honest with you, I really can't comment. I didn't follow the Chase Manhattan involvement, but I think he believes that Chase knew what was going on and made a lot of money out of this. And
how could they not? We're talking about, you said it yourself, billions with a B, you know, billions of dollars are going through this bank.
I can't answer that. I don't know. I never spoke to Chase. I never looked into it myself. So I really can't comment about Chase's involvement or lack of involvement.
You know, it's interesting. I read somewhere where you have a steel trap mind and you can remember everything about a case that occurred in, let's say, 1970s when you were a young attorney. You remember everything. But sometimes as the passage of time flows, the mind doesn't have the same recollection. Do you think as Bernie Madoff has become, what, he's 80, 81 years old?
He's about 80 now.
80 now.
Towards 81, yeah.
When you start thinking back, I mean, I know for myself, I don't have the mind that you do because I think of what happened years ago and I think I just make it up. I create what actually occurred at the time. And I think sometimes when you have this kind of narcissistic personality, perhaps you can formulate things in your mind that really isn't the case.
That may be. I remember the movie that where Robert De Niro played Madoff, which I thought was quite good. I think it was the better of the two. There was another one that Richard Dreyfuss played Madoff, but I thought that
You're talking on Wizard of Lies.
Yes, yeah.
And you were played by Mark Lemira. How was
I don't remember. It was
that was the
very
guy.
Small, it was very small because the whole point of it was to show that really the destruction of the family. It didn't lay into the Ponzi scheme per se, but it showed how the family just disintegrated. And I thought it was very good. I mean, I was able to meet De Niro, who I found to be a very pleasant guy. You know, not Hollywood, if you'll forgive me for saying
that. Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. Did he ask you anything about Bernie? What did you tell him?
I told him, you know, what I thought. I saw the script. But I've signed a confidentiality agreement. But since it's run already, it doesn't matter.
Right.
And I made suggestions, and I asked him, you know, he asked me questions. He was with a couple of people from Tribeca. And I found him to be really bright, charming, and very inquisitive, wanting to know about the man. And then he called me once to ask me some questions. But the fact of the matter is that the movie sought to show really the collapse of the family and how the family disintegrated, as opposed to the workings of the Ponzi scheme, which it did quite well, too. You know, five people who worked on the 17th floor were all indicted and convicted. His assistants and Frank DiPasquale, who was, I think, passed away. He was the number two guy. He was Bernie's right-hand man.
CFO, I think.
While we're on the vein of family, I think I read that a close family member of yours was actually personally affected by Madoff.
Oh, yeah. The short history is my father, and I disclosed this in court because they were making sure I had no conflict. My father had an IRA account in 99. He passed away in 01 and left the IRA account to my mother. And she had the IRA account, and the IRA account was about $900,000. She passed away in 07, and left the IRA account, which he basically lived off, to my two boys. And I called up, I spoke to Bernie, and I said, listen, my mother just passed away, and I got an IRA account, and it's in one account. I want to divide it up. She left it 50-50 for each kid. He said, I don't want to do it. It's too small, so on. And maybe he was basically telling me, which I...
He was gifting you is what he was doing.
Don't do it.
Gifting, don't do it. And so I didn't do it, and I opened up another account. And then I think in 2011, the boys were sued on a clawback because essentially the IRA account was generated through, you know, the money received was generated through through the Ponzi scheme, that money they received. And both my boys said, look, if it's not our money, we don't want it. And we gave the money back.
You had firsthand knowledge and were tantamount to being a victim of this man. And you represented him.
Arguably, I was a victim. Well, my kids were victims. They had to give
Which
the money
makes
back.
You a victim, as far as I'm concerned. Any parent feels like a victim when they're when their children are being victimized.
Yeah. Did your parents get the money back?
No, my parents were gone. The boys, my father died.
I understand that. But their original. I'm talking about the original investment.
No, the original investment was done, I think, in '92. I had an account in '92 with my law firm, a small part of the, I think the 401k we had. And then when I left the firm to go to Wall Street in 94, I had to close the account and I took the money.
And clearly that wasn't considered a conflict so that you could represent him moving forward.
No, it was not. The government agreed it was not a conflict.
And didn't he have to agree, Madoff?
No. No, he didn't have to agree at all.
He didn't have to say, I want this man representing me. I have no...
He did. I think he waived it, but it was certainly waivable.
But, you know, when you talk about that, that wasn't an extreme example. There were organizations, a lot of Jewish organizations like Hadassah, who had their investments through him, and Shelley Weinstein, I think, who was the former CFO of Hadassah, who there was rumor that he may have had an affair with him or whatever.
She claimed he did, but...
It never was borne out. She wasn't thrilled afterwards, but there were so many Jewish organizations that were affected and obviously didn't have the results that your family did. How do you explain it to them?
To the Jewish organizations?
Correct.
The fact of the matter is, unfortunately, no one asked questions. When the market is doing it, making 3% and you're making 10%, I don't want to know. And no one asked it. As long as the money was coming in and they were showing on their statements that their account was growing, their investment was growing, you don't ask.
You know what?
And if you asked, you're out.
I see where you're going with this, and I think it's fascinating. The victims in this case were also greedy. We discussed that.
But I want to make something clear, and Ike, you can dispute this.
Sure.
I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that they were Jewish organizations. I think any organization that put investments, whether it was Catholic or African-American or whatever, still would not have asked the questions. It wasn't about Jewish greed here.
I agree. He would sit at the Palm Beach Country Club in Palm Beach, Florida, and people would come to him and say, Bernie, I want to invest with you. And he said, no, I have enough. I don't want to. Please, Bernie, take our money. Believe me, that happened. It happened to a friend of mine who asked me to call him up, I think in the 90s, came to me and said, do you know Bernie Madoff? I said, I do. I've known Bernie since the 80s. I do. He said, well, I've been trying to reach him. He won't return my phone calls. Well, why do you want to call him? And he said, I'm running a limited partnership. We have some money. Would you please call him and tell him I'm a good guy? And I said, I don't do that. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. 6 months later, he came to me and says, I got great news. He took our money.
Oh, no.
That's a true story.
Oh, wow, that's really something.
That's a true story.
I'm sure if you ever see them again, you're saying, I don't know.
I don't know if we can argue that this was greed-based, though, on the parts of the victim. That's what I'm trying to get at. I mean, it's an interesting theory to couch yourself on, but at the end of the day, who knows even what questions to ask, whether to ask these questions at all? Who knows that they're being blindsided like this?
There were some people who were very sophisticated. If you go back to the boiler room, to the Stratton-Oakmont days, cold callers would call up elderly people, and they would say, they'd give them a script, we have an offering here, 5,000 shares, $5 a share, we know the company, we think this stock is going to double in 2 weeks. And they go through this whole song and dance about how this company is doing great, we're tied into Wall Street, blah, blah, blah. And the caller would say, I'm not sure. What do you mean you're not sure? And they'd write him a check with a voice at the end of the line, because you can double your money in 2 or 3 weeks. And you never met this person. You just had a voice at the other end of the line promising you that in 2 or 3 weeks you're going to double your money. And you write out a check and you send it in. That's how the boiler room survived. That's how Jordan Belfort was successful.
Yeah, that's for another day. I wish we had more time to talk about Jordan Belfort, but there's a couple more topics that I want to talk about before we have to end.
Sure.
First of all, quickly, 150 years, obviously, Bernie Madoff's going to die in prison. You don't have a problem with that, although you argued 7 to 12 years, whatever it was. In the end of the day, you've been on record saying that Bernie wanted resolution, closure, and therefore he just agreed to whatever the number was because it wouldn't make a difference.
The answer is yes, because, and I think if you want to give him some credit, he did it for his boys and he did it for his wife. We thought his wife was going to die. She was under enormous pressure. She couldn't leave their co-op, their apartment building, without reporters running after them, taking pictures. She wouldn't go out and try to get a cup of coffee. A cup of soup, they would be all over the place. She couldn't leave, and the pressure was enormous. We could have gamed the system. We could have kept him out another year.
Yeah.
And then on the eve of trial, he'd plead guilty, and he'd go away for the rest of his life. So he'd at least have another year out. But the pressure on his kids and his wife was intense, and so he made the decision that to put an end to this, I'm going to plead now and get it done. And as soon as he pleaded, and he got remanded to jail, the helicopters disappeared, the satellite dishes disappeared, the reporters and the photographers disappeared, and his wife could at least return, hopefully, to anonymity.
And unfortunately, not for his kids, as you've already mentioned.
No,
they both passed away. A tragedy, tragedy. We only have a couple of minutes. First of all, I want to ask you how he's doing now, and then I want to finish off on a more of a positive note, talk a little bit about Hebrew University. So first
That'd
of all, tell us how Bernie Madoff is doing.
He's doing okay. He's in communication. He's been giving, he's being interviewed by reporters, psychologists, sociologists. They're all trying to get a picture of who he is. And under the circumstances, he's not in a maximum security prison. He's in a prison where he can get up in the morning, leave the cell, and go, you know, walk outside. There's grass. Of course, it is a prison. There's a wall and barbed wire. But it's not as if you're in a supermax where you see daylight 1 hour a day.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess
doing okay.
I guess a lot of people don't like hearing that, but, you know, so be it. It's our system.
Well, let them spend time in a prison.
I know he's been on record saying that the pain of not being around family all the time has been pretty devastating. So there is something devastating. Speaking of something that is not devastating, tell us a little bit. We only have a couple of minutes about your work with the Friends of Hebrew University, and you're an honorary doctorate there. And what have you done to help?
Well, I've been to Israel about 45 times.
That's all.
Patty. Yep. I met Patty through Hebrew University. As a matter of fact, Patty and I are working on a case together.
Oh, great.
And she's a terrific lawyer and a great lady.
Yep.
So I go to Israel. I'm on the Board of Governors. I'm on the Executive Committee. And what we do is we raise money for the Hebrew University. And the money goes to any one of several. We have almost 2,000 endowments. Money goes to, you name it, nanotechnology, cancer research, Alzheimer's research, the humanities, archaeology. I mean, they've got so many different programs, and there are about 22,000 students there. About 10%, 10 to 12% are Israeli Arabs. And of course, the men, after high school, go into the army for 3 years. The women go in for 2 years. And then when they come out, they go to the university. And unlike the United States, where if you want to be a doctor, you go to college for 4 years and then to med school, they go right into med school.
So yeah, it's really incredible. My family has, my father has in his memory an account. There's a pharmaceutical building that we've been supporting for Hebrew University.
Oh, that's great.
So he was a pharmacist for 60 years, and that's where any donations go. There's so many great programs at Hebrew University, and I really admire you for doing the work. You and Patty Glazer are doing great work for them.
Since 2002. In the last 17 years, we've had either they've taught there, done research there, studied there, got their degrees there, 7 Nobel Prize winners.
Wow.
Biochemistry, economics, just you name
it. It's impressive. Well, we've got to close.
Microbiology and so on.
Thank you so much. Ike Sorkin, Bernie Madoff's attorney, and more than that, a real gentleman and a fine lawyer. We want to thank you for being here, Melissa.
My pleasure. Thank you, Ike, and thank you so much for giving back to the Jewish community.
Thank you very much, and it's my pleasure to have spoken to you, and anytime you want to continue to talk.
We got to hear
I
about the wolf,
on that.
The Wolf of Wall Street. That's the next topic. All right, take
that
care.
That was fun.
And that's what we're going to look forward to that. Thanks for being with us. And
All
we got
right,
a
big well. Happy
okay.
New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, to you and your family. We got to close it out for today. Wow. Fascinating hour. Melissa, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you.
When you sit in for Carrie. I think Carrie's going to be back next week. Everyone have a great week, and we'll see you same time, same day, same channel.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
As a small business owner, you make every dollar count. So what could you do with $10? Go to Vistaprint.com today and you'll get 500 high-quality custom business cards for only $9.99. That's less than 2 cents per card. And at Vistaprint, your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. So it's never been easier to turn 500 strangers into connections. Just visit Vistaprint.com and use promo code 3838 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 3838.
Technology Truths, brought to you by GEICO.
Technology Truths.
Truth, you talk faster when your phone has only 1% battery left.
Hey, hon, what's up?
Hey, sweetie, can you pick up Kitty Litter Fabric Softener? Oh, the lemony fresh kind. And French vanilla non-dairy creamer on your way home from work.
What?
Truth, it's so easy to switch and save on car insurance at GEICO.com.
Why are you talking like that?
Gotta go. I'm taking Kevin to Taekwondo and I only have a...
Honey? Hello?
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Hi, I'm Aaron Tippin. During my career in the music business, I met all kinds of people and made lots of really good friends. I know it can be hard to say no to your friends, but when it comes to drugs, there's no other way. Even prescription or over-the-counter drug abuse can prevent you from achieving your goals. So do yourself a favor when it comes to choosing whether or not to succumb to peer pressure. Say yes to a drug-free life. This message is brought to you by the United States Air Force.
Holidays leave you strapped for cash? How does 4 shots at $1,000 sound?
Lord, that sounds good.
It's the $1,000 payoff on 790 KABC, and it's easy to win. Just listen for the national keyword weekdays at 6, 9, noon, and 3, then text it to 95819 for your shot at $1,000 four times a day.
Ka-ching.
The $1,000 payoff on 790 KABC, because politicians aren't the only ones that should be paid off. Rules and info at KBC.com. And please, do not text and drive.
Let's do it.
Okay.
O-K-L-L-L.
On this week's Uncensored OKLA podcast,
Steve, Jillian, and me, Dorothy, try and get E.T.'s Nichelle Durner a date.
And I reveal that journalists love chaos. The OKLA podcast, free, uncensored, and unmissable.
Download and subscribe for free on iTunes and KABC.com.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gerby, and Wynn.